coming up on the Movie Review Crew podcast.
Two movies that have cracked my top 10 of the year, which was actually exciting because I was getting kind of bummed out with the mediocrity that we've been seeing recently.
Was it Pinocchio and Thor?
Pinocchio and Thor Love and Thunder. Yeah.
Yes.
No.
Yes. Go, Aaron.
No.
All right. Welcome in, everybody, to another edition of the Movie Review Crew. I'll be your host today, Shane Chronican, and joining me is Steve Rushlaw.
How are you now?
And Aaron Chronican.
Hello.
We have a fun episode for you. I'm excited about this one. This movie I enjoy. This is one that I did not see coming from you, and I'm ready to talk about it. We'll be reviewing Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid from 1969. A really fun. You almost can't even call it a Western. It just happens to be like it's almost like a buddy movie set in a Western.
Oh, definitely.
Western setting, but we'll get into that. Before we do, it's been a while. So, Steve, what have you seen lately? Anything new?
I've seen two new ones. I saw the new Pinocchio movie. While Tom Hanks is good in it, I think they really need to, like, stop doing live-action remakes.
They've not had great luck. And even the ones that have been fine still kind of had a feeling of why was that even made? Why? I mean, it didn't improve upon the original. It didn't change much, and the changes they made were terrible. But oh well, what are you going to do, Aaron? Aaron, what have you seen?
Well, and they call them the. I don't know my thoughts on those things. They're unwanted. They're usually not good. They call them live action when they're not live. It's one real person against a CG backdrop and some hybrid. Awful CGI characters.
It's almost terrible. Like reverse Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where it's one real person in a cartoon world.
And I honestly couldn't tell you how creepy the Pinocchio doll was.
Was it?
Well, that's Zemeckis does that. He tries to do these technologically advanced things that aren't quite ready, and they look terrible and they're weird. And
like everybody knows it is a doll, and then he tries to make him look like a real human boy, but also like a doll. So it's got that creepy crossover. Yeah, I just didn't think it looked very good.
It's supposed to look real, but it's still off.
And to me, the Pinocchio story, just for a Disney story, it's not that good. It's a real, it's a wooden doll that turns into a puppet or a real boy.
Not one I ever, even seeing it growing up, I know I've seen it. I couldn't tell you what the hell the story is other than he becomes a real boy.
Yeah, he gets swallowed by a whale at some point. His nose grows.
He makes him. He goes on adventure. He gets swallowed by a whale. He gets reunited with Tom Hanks. The end.
Yeah.
Yep. Happily ever after.
I have no interest in seeing that one. And anything else that you've seen?
Yeah, I watched one of my top anticipated movies of this year was Thor, Love and Thunder. Ooh,
speaking of real people in a cartoon world, I think it's... So,
while it is a bad movie, yes. I enjoyed the hell out of this movie. It was a blast. I like Taika Waititi's directing, the music he uses to get it going. It's just
so,
it's not meant to be a serious movie. It's meant to
be. And let me ask you this then.
The problem.
Yeah. So that's everything I've read. Everything I've heard is that it very much goes away from the tone and the feel of Ragnarok, and it kind of sets its own thing. You've seen it late now. Did you know that going in, and did that kind of set up the expectations for you?
Yeah, I knew what to expect going in. So my expectations were super low going in. Compared to Ragnarok, it's not like even close to the same thing. They tried to go funny with pretty much everything that Thor does.
God, that makes me want to throw up.
And that's what a lot of what I read is that it's the humor that just interjects itself into every situation.
And from what I read, it clashes with the Christian Bale serious performance. It's just tonally inconsistent.
You remember when Jean-Claude Van Damme did the splits between the two buses?
I do.
They literally do that between like two, almost like flying tanks. He stops both of them. Yeah, it's so like
it's just out there, outlandish comedy.
Yes,
yeah. Be prepared, I guess.
I caught myself giggling about most of it, but like it.
So I guess you just have to be in the kind of right frame of mind.
Yeah, it's like I said, it's not a very good movie, but I still enjoyed it. Christian Bale is
that's the only reason I will consider watching it.
He's pretty good. He plays Gore the God Butcher, and he plays it fantastically. Is that a word?
Yeah. I'm
majestical.
If I'll enjoy it.
There we go.
Because all the hatred that I've seen there were two things that I've seen the hatred on, and it's both stemming from the comedy, and one is that it's just interjected in these serious situations, and two, it's just kind of people were upset that it strayed so far from what was established in Ragnarok. So I wonder if that was just a case of they had expectations of one thing, and it was they were given another. I have my expectations focus on what it actually is now that I would be seeing it after the fact, maybe that'll help.
Yeah, but now those expectations are that I'll hate it because I'm not a childish baby Disney fan.
Yeah,
Star Wars one-liners.
If you watch it, definitely go in with very low expectations.
Just try to have
fun. Yeah, I did the same thing with all of the other Disney movies and still hated them.
And like I've said this the past couple of times, watching all these Disney shows and movies, it's starting to get a lot. There's way too many. Like, just this past year, they had 6 different shows, I believe, from now until calendar year date. So they had Loki, they had Hawkeye, they had She-Hulk, they had Moon Knight, they had Ms. Marvel. And I'll tell you this, the only one of those TV shows worth watching is Moon Knight, because Oscar Isaacs.
Yeah.
Isaacs or Isaac?
Isaac. And even that, I didn't particularly like the show itself or the story really. I loved him in it.
Yes,
and I enjoyed seeing Ethan Hawke in it. And
definitely.
So I enjoyed the performances, centrally Oscar Isaacs. And so I enjoyed watching him. He was brilliant in it. I didn't particularly enjoy the story or the show.
The shows haven't been that great. They've been trying to add more depth to these characters, the shows have been very miss.
Yeah, they kind of just, I don't know. I guess we'll just see if Marvel can find their way. They seem kind of lost after Infinity Wars.
But moving on, what did you guys see?
Aaron, what have you seen?
Two movies that have cracked my top 10 of the year, which was actually exciting because I was getting kind of bummed out with the mediocrity that we've been seeing recently.
Was it Pinocchio and Thor?
Pinocchio and Thor Love and Thunder. Yeah.
Yes.
No.
Yes. Go, Aaron.
No. First was when I had on my radar and finally came out to stream on Amazon, called The Phantom of the Open, which is a golf comedy based on a true story that has Mark Rylance as this guy that basically just sneaks his way into the British Open, shoots statistically the worst round of golf ever. It's like, and I don't want to go into any more about what happens after that, but the story is incredible. Mark Rylance is unbelievably good. It's a top 5 performance of the year for me, and it's a movie that gets kind of sappy at times, but man, it'll get you. It's a heck of a movie, and I absolutely recommend it.
Who's that directed by? I mean, I've not even ever heard of that.
I looked up the director and I don't remember. I'll look it up real quick while I talk about the other one.
Craig Roberts.
Yeah, what did he do? He did something else I remembered because they were
doesn't look like anything. Well, let me see. Hold on. Anyways, go on.
Yeah, what else have you seen, Aaron?
The other one is the Elvis movie I finally saw. It's available to stream on HBO now. And I mean, Elvis died before we were even born. I didn't know anything about Elvis other than I knew his famous songs. But again, incredible story. Baz Luhrmann, I mean, it's absolutely feels like the wrong way to tell the story because Baz Luhrmann has no, he's like the Michael Bay version of dramas. He just can't control himself, but gosh, it's incredible. Austin Butler, again, top five performance of the year. I would bet a lot of money that he's going to be nominated for an Oscar for his performance.
I can guarantee that.
Yeah, I mean, it's great. Top five movie of the year for me. It was fun. It was, I don't know anything about Elvis. I didn't know anything, but man, I liked it a lot. Top five of the year for me. I highly recommend that one as well.
What did you think of Thanks in that? Or as you like to call him, Tom Hanks.
Thomas Hanks, yeah.
Yes.
Mr. Thomas Hanks was... it was kind of refreshing to see him play a role where he's just such an absolute creep. Just an awful person, basically. Yeah. He's one of these guys that's just such a salesman that he's this awful person that plays everything off like he's the hero, and it's a good role for him. I liked it. Liked it a lot.
I need to interrupt to go back
and tell us how much you hate Baz Luhrmann. I get it.
No. That movie, I have so little interest. I don't have enough interest to hate it. I just don't like Elvis's music. I don't find him interesting. I looked at the trailer. It just doesn't interest me. But more importantly, going back to Craig Roberts, he's directed nothing, but it needs to be noted that as an actor, he appeared in the 2014 Neighbors movie, and his character's name was Ass Juice. So if nothing else, that needs to be brought up, and apparently I need to go watch Neighbors and find out what the deal is with Ass Juice. What is that?
I've seen it. It's not a very good movie.
Man.
It's Seth Rogen and Zac Efron.
I remember it.
Also, I forgot to mention.
Want to see it.
Sally Hawkins is in that Phantom of the Open movie. She plays Mark Rylance's wife. And she also is incredible. I mean, I loved every minute of that movie. I can't recommend it enough. Because most people won't hear about it because, you know, it just released quietly on streaming. But
The Phantom of the... I thought you were talking about Elvis for a second.
No, Phantom of the Open.
Okay.
And then anyways, real quick, I'll touch on two others I saw. A Netflix movie that just came out recently called I Came By. It's kind of a thriller, horror-ish type of movie. More thriller than horror. It's got people you'd recognize. I can't remember his name. George McKay. He was in 1917. He's been in a lot of things recently. He's good. Kelly MacDonald, you'd recognize. Hugh Bonneville. I know I've seen him before. I couldn't tell you what
his name. Oh, yeah. I put this on my watch list. Yeah.
It was just kind of a decent thriller. Not great. Not bad. Worth watching, but and then the other one, a cartoon movie, Paws of Fury, that I watched with my son, and I actually thought it was pretty funny. I mean, for an animated movie, I laughed way more than I probably should have. So for kids, absolutely yes, see it. But that's all I saw.
All right, I have not seen much, at least anything new. We've still been kind of going through Yellowstone, catching up on that. But what I did see is I went to theaters to see Beast with Idris Elba.
Oh, boy.
Imagine, heck, man. You can't sit here and say how you don't want to see the Elvis movie and then we'll see some movie about dudes fighting lions with their bare hands.
Why would it? Who's more interesting? Some dude that just did a bunch of drugs, got fat, and died on a toilet, or somebody fighting a lion? I do not care about Elvis. He has zero interest in me. How long is that scene? I would much rather see somebody fighting a lion. And by the way, he gets in like a punch, but gets wrecked.
I was like, how long was this?
Yeah, it's good, more than 10 seconds and he lives through it, it's stupid.
So here's the deal. It is a very stupid good movie. Creature feature. And so if you like those, you'll enjoy it. It's very thrilling. It has it's a good combination of tension with jump scares thrown in there. It's kind of like Cujo, where this family's trapped in this vehicle for a lot of the time and they have to go out to, you know, do these little deals that they have to accomplish in order to maybe get out of there while this lion's kind of lurking there and attacking them. It's very
What kind of thing? Go get water, go get food.
Yeah, you know, so like go there's the, you know, they call him their uncle. It's the guy that guides them. It's their mom's friend from childhood.
The guy from District 9.
Yes, yes. So he's in it. They have to, you know, try to go save him, and then they have to go. So there's just things they have to do, but
obvious play is that he should have sent. He's got what, three children? Send them out for each time he has to go out and do something. Send one out as a decoy.
That's what he did,
to get mauled and eaten while he takes care of what he needs to take care of.
That's what he did. It's good though. And
good.
It's
good. Good.
If you like creature features, you'll like it. I very much enjoyed it. Very much. It was shot in a way that was a lot of long sweeping shots, continuous shots, not in a gimmicky way. Cause there were multiple cuts, but they were just long, long shots. And it made it feel kind of natural, the conversations, the characters, the tension. It was shot very well, filmed very well. Idris Elba is always immensely watchable, and it was no exception in this one. It was fantastic. I mean, it's nothing deeper than a family that's, you know, trapped by this lion, and it doesn't have to be deeper than that. It does what it sets out to be, and it's incredibly thrilling. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it a lot. Probably in my top 10 of the year. I don't know specifically where at, but bottom five of that, I'm sure.
So, because nobody saw it in theaters, it should be available to rent very quickly. So
I don't know, man. Top Gun's not available to rent until like 2037.
Because people kept paying theater money to see it. Nobody's going to see it.
Ridiculous.
Idris Elba.
Yeah, it's not coming to Blu-ray till November 1st. That's crazy. It came out in May.
Yeah, that's insane. I mean, good for it for being successful, but I'm trying to watch that at home.
I mean, it just came out on Prime.
Yeah, to buy.
Yeah, for 2 weeks.
For $20.
Yeah.
Well, 2 weeks anyways, does anybody want to talk about anything else, or should we just hop right into
Butch Cassidy? I have one thing wanted to talk about. I was watching a TikTok, and
a good start. Okay.
It wasn't. It pissed me. It pissed me off, and it's probably going to piss you off.
Go ahead.
So it was one of those like actors you didn't know died in the past that have died.
Right.
And the first one was Paul Newman. Try to take a guess what movie they put
Cars.
As.
Cars.
Yep. Cars?
Wait, hold on. Was this Mike's TikTok? Was this a TikTok that Mike Lucas made?
It pissed me off so much. I was so mad. I was like, that's the movie you put.
All right. Good segue into Butch Cassidy and the Sundance.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So let's get into that.
Paul Newman, the star. You'd only know him from Cars.
Right. Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. It's a 1969. You know what? I didn't even see what it's rated. I imagine PG-13, I guess. I don't know. 1 hour, 50 minutes long. Classified on IMDb as a biography, crime, drama, not even Western. That's weird, but it is a Western.
PG. It was PG.
PG. Okay. PG. I guess that was before PG-13 was even a rating, wasn't it? So
yeah,
that makes sense.
Definitely.
And man, this is going to take me a while. Interject if you want to talk about them or not, because the people in and behind this movie are incredible.
What they've gone on
to incredible.
Do. Yeah.
So
or what they did before this too. I mean, yeah,
right. Starting with the director, George Roy Hill, and I'm just gonna go through the cliff notes. If you've not seen this movie, do yourself a favor and see it. I'm talking to the audience now. anybody listening, do yourself a favor and see this, but also dig deep into who the director, the writer, the cinematographer, the actors, dig deep into their stuff and find it. These guys are incredible. But anyway, starting with George Roy Hill, brief summation of his filmography. He did Hawaii in 1966, which was nominated for 7 Academy Awards. He did Slaughterhouse-Five in 1972, a Kurt Vonnegut adaptation. He did this in 69. He then did The Sting. He reunited with Newman and Redford. That was nominated for 10 Academy Awards. It won 7, including Best Picture and Best Director. He then did reunited with Robert Redford for The Great Waldo Pepper. And then he reunited with Paul Newman for Slapshot. Those were in the late 70s. In 1982, he did a movie called The World According to Garp, which was Robin Williams' second leading role in a film. So that's interesting. And nominated for 2 Academy Awards. And then wasn't nominated for awards, but people would know it. He directed Funny Farm with Chevy Chase in 1988. So, I mean, this director is incredible, incredible, incredible director. Like I mentioned, one nominated for Best Director for Butch Cassidy, one Best Director for The Sting. The writer, William Goldman, we could do a whole hour episode on his filmography, but I'll do the highlights. This in 1969, which he won an Academy Award for Best Original Screenplay. 1976, he did All the President's Men, which won him an Academy Award for Best Adapted Screenplay. He did A Bridge Too Far in 1977. I'm going to skip over one and come back to it. But in 1990, he did Misery. 1994, he did Maverick with Mel Gibson. Speaking of Lion Attack movies, this guy wrote The Ghost in the Darkness with Val Kilmer. He wrote Absolute Power, which was a late 90s thriller with Clint Eastwood. He wrote The General's Daughter, a late 90s thriller with John Travolta. And then...
Okay, go back to the one.
Probably a low point, but it's worth noting. He did 2003, he did Dreamcatcher, another Stephen King adaptation. Yikes. But the important part, this man wrote the novel and the screenplay for The Princess Bride. So this dude's
automatically
on the
Mount Everest of screenwriters. Yeah,
Mount Everest, like automatic in for sure.
I mean, that's first of all, this movie is the dialogue and that may be attributed to him, the actress, the director, whatever. But then, I mean, The Princess Bride is a near perfect movie, and mostly due to how wonderful the story and dialogue is. I mean, even if this guy had done awful crap for his entire career, but did The Princess Bride, we have to be thankful that he did that.
Right. I mean, but he didn't. He went on to do loads of things like I just listed. So I'm going to briefly touch on, the cinematographer is Conrad Hall, which if you don't know him, you should. This is a guy that was, 10 time Academy Award nominee for Best Cinematography, won 2 of those. But he did it for, I'll touch on the ones that, Butch Cassidy and Sundance Kid, it was nominated for this. He also did Tequila Sunrise, which was a Mel Gibson and Kurt Russell action movie back in the day. Road to Perdition,
crap, man.
One of my favorite movies. Yes. If you want to talk about cinematography, I'll bring that movie up.
I'm pretty sure that was his last one.
Because he won. He was nominated and won posthumously. So yeah, that's man, Conrad Hall. I mean, we could do an hour episode on each of these guys, but getting back to Butch Cassidy specifically, let's talk about the stars. it's just
right.
So
that's
crazy.
The thing. It's like, dude, the people involved.
Yeah, that's behind the camera.
Yeah,
you guys could even talk about the composer, Burt Bacharach, 3 Oscar wins.
Yeah. I mean, the trophy case of the people involved in this movie. And unfortunately, here's the deal. Well, I'll talk about that when we get there, but let's talk about Paul Newman, obviously best known for Cars.
Obviously.
Obviously. but
straight
nine.
Straight up G.
Right. If you again, if you're not familiar with Paul Newman's filmography, do some digging. You're gonna love it. But this dude, 9 Academy Award nominations for acting, 8 for Best Lead Actor in Cat on a Hot Tin Roof in 58, The Hustler 61, HUD 1963, Cool Hand Luke 67, Absence of Malice 81, The Verdict, which we reviewed 1982, The Color of Money, which he won for in 1986, and Nobody's Fool in 1994. Also nominated for Best Supporting Actor in Road to Perdition in 2002. I did not know that he also directed a movie which was nominated for Best Picture in 1968 called Rachel.
That's his wife, isn't it?
Joanne
Woodward?
I don't know. I've never seen it. So this dude's been nominated 9 times for acting. He was nominated for, he directed a Best Picture nominee. He received an honorary award in 1986, which was basically like, hey, dude, at this point in your career, you're 0-6 in nominations. Probably some of those you should have won, so we're going to give you this. But he ended up winning one, thankfully. And then in 1994, he was given the Humanitarian Award from the Academy Award. So, man, these awards. And then, unfortunately, I shouldn't say unfortunately. Fortunately, there's also Robert Redford in this movie. Unfortunately for him, for a man that's so well known and has been so good for so long, he's only been nominated for 1 Academy Award for Best Actor.
We talked about that when we talked. What did we do? Three Days of the Condor.
I wasn't on that episode. Yeah,
and it's incredible. I mean,
it's insane. And I think I know why. I have a theory as to why. I'll get into that in a bit. Actually, I'll get into it when I talk about his performance in this movie because it relates. But his 1 Academy Award nomination was for Best Actor for The Sting in 1973, which he also was in with Paul Newman, like I said. But he was nominated twice for Best Director for Quiz Show in 1994, and he won for Ordinary People in 1980. Quiz Show was also nominated for Best Picture. And he also got an honorary award for basically for being an actor, a director, a producer. He created the Sundance Festival. So basically just like a lifetime achievement award in Hollywood. But man, he's good. And then I don't want to discount Catherine Ross, who played at a place in this, the love interest of Robert Redford. I don't know if they were wife, girlfriend. I don't know what they were. But anyways. She was in The Graduate, known for The Graduate, this obviously, The Stepford Wives, Donnie Darko, and she was nominated for Best Supporting Actress in The Graduate in 1967. So the talent involved in this movie. And
also people would recognize Strother Martin or Strother yes. Martin. He's right. in it for very short, but yeah, he's the briefly. Guy that delivers the face, though. Failure to communicate line in Cool Hand Luke.
Yeah. Yep.
There's 2 things I want to hit on with Robert Redford. If you haven't seen the movie All Is Lost.
Oh, I cannot believe how he didn't. I mean, that alone.
It's literally just him in that movie. And it's fantastic.
I'm glad you bring that up. I'm going to talk about that. Like I said, I want to bring up my theory. It relates to that movie, this movie. But I want to wait until we're actually talking about acting at that point.
And number 2, I wanted to say, I was a little late to the Paul Newman. I didn't really watch movies until in college.
Right.
Aaron loves Paul Newman. And pretty much every movie I see, I keep coming to the conclusion that...
that he's Cole Hauser's dad?
I don't know if... Yes. I don't know if you can argue that anybody is a better actor...
It's
hard to argue.
You get into semantics of preference and it's art, so it's subjective. But
yes,
if anybody had the conversation about best actors of all time and his name wasn't brought up, then I'd be offended. If you don't think he's the best, it's subjective. It's art, whatever. Yeah. If you don't at least bring him up, then what's the point of even talking to you? But let's before we get into specifics, let's talk about the numbers of this of Butch Cassidy. On Rotten Tomatoes, the critics give it an 89%, giving an 8.2 out of 10, with a consensus stating, with its iconic pairing of Paul Newman and Robert Redford, jaunty screenplay, and Burt Bacharach's score, Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid has gone down as among the defining moments in late 60s American cinema. And yeah, that'll kind of mirror my thoughts on it. But we'll get into that. The audience gives it a 92%, just slightly higher, and an 8.6 out of 10, again, just slightly higher. And on IMDb, it has an 8 out of 10. So across the board, very, very good. We give a brief synopsis, and then we'll kind of give our first impressions and then go into a kind of a deep dive and discussion. So the synopsis, this is based very loosely on factual events, but the film tells the story of Wild West outlaws Robert Leroy Parker, known as Butch Cassidy, obviously that's Paul Newman, and his partner, Harry Longball, aka the Sundance Kid, played by Robert Redford, who are on the run from a crack U.S. posse, detective posse, after a string of train robberies. The pair and Sundance's lover at a place flee to Bolivia to escape the posse. And that's it. And there's kind of two halves of this movie. There's their bank robbing days. Actually, there's, I guess, three parts. There's a bank robbing days. There's their escape from this, the Pinkerton, this kind of agency that's after them. And then there's their life in Bolivia. But let's get quickly into first thoughts. Steve, you picked this. Had you seen it before? And if not, what were your first thoughts this time? If so, what were your first thoughts the first time you did see it?
This is my first time seeing this, which might sound crazy because this is
probably
one of his most famous movies. For both of them, actually.
Right.
But I loved this movie. For being 1969, it doesn't seem that dated. It was. No. I had a blast watching it.
Yeah. Part of that's the setting, but I agree.
Most definitely.
I had seen this before. On rewatch, I loved it. I agree. I think a lot of that has to do with the writing, the pacing, the feel, the tone, the music. It has a modern pacing. It doesn't feel like your typical Western. So I think that helps it. Keeps itself from feeling dated.
That's what nails it. Yeah. It because it's not just lost in the thousands of Westerns being made at this time. It's not just tough guys with stern exterior slinging tough guy one line. It's a fun buddy movie in the West, and it's two charismatic actors. I mean, Paul Newman right at his peak, Robert Redford starting his career. I mean, it does feel fresh and new and not outside of the box of your normal Western.
And not only that, but it's original and it's still unique. I mean, like you mentioned, Westerns are known for being very somber, very, very stoic, very serious movies. And this has such a lighthearted tone. I mean, with singing in the rain and riding on bikes to just the banter between the two, it just kind of has this happy feeling that's not present in Westerns typically. And try to name another Western that's kind of taken a lighthearted approach. It's such a serious, somber genre that even still,
but not a full-on comedy.
Right. No, it takes itself seriously enough, but I mean the tone itself is just more lighthearted. Yeah. And I can't name a Western that's I mean, unless you're talking about Wild Wild West, which goes full on silly, but full but bonkers, I can't think of a Western that has this kind of lighthearted tone and feeling to it. So even, you know, however many years later now that we are, it's still unique and original within its genre. Okay, so Steve, you picked this. You hadn't seen it before. Like we said, you can't talk about a single aspect of this movie without talking about like one of the all-time greats. So where do you want to start? What aspect of this movie stood out to you that you really want to go into?
I mean, we might as well just get into acting. That's
This movie was sold on.
I mean, even Robert Redford's a huge name, but then you got Paul Newman on top of it. You got two of the greatest actors of all time in this movie, and them interacting with each other, it just some of the banter they have back and forth.
It was, well, and that's it. It's the way they interact with the, I mean, because at this time, Robert Redford wasn't famous. No, I mean, he had done TV shows and a few little movies, but, and people, when they think of these two, it's like they're inseparable or something, and they've only done two movies together.
Oh yeah, definitely.
And I know they were friends, but I mean, the fact that they're remembered as this pair is because of how good they are together in this, and even, in my opinion, better in The Sting.
Right. Which, let's be honest, The Sting is, it's essentially an unrelated sequel. It's just like, how can we get these two to kind of do the same thing? And they made The Sting. But yeah, the acting, the pairing of those two, fantastic. They work so well together. It's almost flawless. I mean, you want to talk about, when I think of like buddy cops, I think of them forming in my first exposure to that was 48 Hours. And usually it's as a result of buddy cop movies, but this was, you know, 20 years before that. and this is what a lot of movies are trying to replicate and fail to do in modern movies, is just put these two personalities together and let them carry a movie. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Very rarely does it reach the heights of this one. And I just can't speak enough of how fun it is. It wouldn't matter what the story is, I would just watch these two together. That's how good they are.
It's these two and the writing. I mean, they're delivering.
Correct. Yes.
Insanely well-written lines. I mean, they're not laugh out loud, slapsticky funny. It's just, and coming from these two, it feels natural and it feels like just who they are. And it's a pair that works so well together. And it's like immediately you're in it. They don't have to introduce these characters and give these big backstories, because they let the legends of Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid tell you who they, like, they don't have to fill in with an hour of backstory. You're just in it with these guys for 2 hours and then it's over.
That's what I was going to say about these two. It doesn't feel like they are acting. They feel like they're interacting with each other in real life situations. It doesn't feel forced or anything. It feels like they've been best friends for their whole life.
Yeah, definitely. And that's a testament to, yes, their acting. The writing, though, as Aaron said, this is a comedy. This has funny moments, but it's more situational comedy and comedy that comes as a result of these two kind of clashing personalities. It's not slapstick comedy. It's never, the comedy doesn't ever take you out of the real life situation of the movie. It just happens to be funny because that's the tone. That's the way that especially Paul Newman's character approaches life, in just this kind of jovial way. And then he clashes with this more serious version of the Sundance Kid.
Yeah, well, and even the Sundance, just the way he delivers some of the lines and the, it's so dry, but I mean, but it is funny.
He's definitely the straight man. He's the you know, to compare it to a more recent one, Cop Out, he's Bruce Willis. He's the more serious guy that's little more reserved, a little more somber, I guess, stoic. And that's what I wanted to bring up when I talked about Robert Redford earlier, is his performance specifically. You could see, and he did it throughout his whole career, and that's what he was kind of known for. And I'll just say it this way. He does so much without talking, and he does so much where he's just so intensely listening. Like, his acting outside of his delivery of lines when other people are talking is so damn good. He's just,
which
the way he uses silence is so good.
Yes, because that's where it plays off of Paul Newman's blabby character.
Yeah.
Is in most of the conversations, is Paul Newman says one thing. The camera cuts to Robert Redford's character, Sundance Kid, who says nothing, just gives him a look. Then Paul Newman replies with something. And so it's just back and forth with, I mean, it's, I think part of the success, I mean, we talked about the filmmakers and how good everybody involved, but part of the success is whoever found these two, and whoever, I mean, Paul Newman's an easy sell,
right.
That's easy, but to find somebody so perfect for the role that's not some super famous guy at the time that fit so perfectly, whoever decided on that casting the movie.
Yeah, no kidding. And so I want to talk about, I want to go into my theory. Tell me if you agree why he only has one nomination. And it's because that's kind of Robert Redford's trademark, is he's a quieter actor. And my theory is that he started as all of these larger than life, louder than life actors like Pacino I could go on and list a bunch, but he's in an era, he went through the 70s where these just absolute monster actors are coming out.
Yeah,
Jack Nicholson and De Niro's quieter, but he still had his rage moments and his craziness. And then you've got Robert Redford, who's just kind of a subdued, more subtle, and not even subtle, just a quieter actor.
Yep, 100%.
Silence, and I think that kind of put him on the back burner compared to these I guess more expressive actors of that era. And
didn't we talk about that in whatever the Captain America movie he's in? It's like he immediately brings some.
It's just his presence.
Yes, that's it. I mean, and he's not showy. It's a Marvel movie, and he plays a straight character he's kind of a villainy character, but he's not a goofy, over-the-top villain like Marvel usually does. It's just the weight he brings to his role, and part of that's just the reputation he's earned over time, but it is. And Paul Newman later in his career was the same way.
Yes.
The beginning Paul of his Newman, career, he was more showy and more acty, stage acty. But late career, it's just the weight of seeing Paul Newman on screen and the subtlety of a performance.
And so that brought me back to what Steve mentioned, All Is Lost, where that to me is almost like that is the epitome of Robert Redford's entire career, where it's an entire movie of him almost not speaking and just acting. And that's just his career. He's a quiet, reserved, but he still in that silence acts the hell out of his roles. And he did so in this. I thought he was fantastic.
And I looked at the score for All Is Lost on IMDb. I don't know what it's got on Rotten Tomatoes, but it's got a 6.9. on IMDb. Really?
You got to remember, it's a 2-hour movie with hardly any dialogue. A lot of people going to hate that.
Yeah, no doubt.
That's what I was going to say. A lot of people hate it, but like, I don't know how many words he says in that movie. It's not much, but just watching that for 2 hours, it's one of the greatest acting movies I've ever seen.
Yep, no doubt. Let me ask this then. I know it's hard to pick, and they're two very drastically different performances, but which did you enjoy more? Not necessarily which was better, but which did you enjoy more, Robert Redford or Paul Newman in this?
For me, I'd say Paul Newman, mostly because it's more showy. But it's not taking anything away from Robert Redford, because he was fantastic in this as well.
Yeah, I agree. Overall, I say Paul Newman, but favorite moments or favorite lines, I think maybe come from, because I'm trying to think, and I think the few that pop to mind are from Redford.
Yes. Right. And I don't, Newman is definitely more consistently funny in this, because like I said, Redford plays the straight character, but Redford gets some funny moments in
that. Yes, that's what I'm thinking of. The two that come to mind are,
so let's hop into this then. You started off, Aaron. Favorite scene, favorite moments, or moments that stood out to you, what were yours?
I don't know, favorite moments, I'm thinking favorite lines, because there's a whole lot of funny lines.
Let's do that, but
there's one, they're running from these people chasing them, and they're at in some cave-ish area up in the rocks, and they're just talking, and Paul Newman's talking and keeps blabbing and blabbing, and Rudford keeps replying with these grunts or looks or no reply at all.
Yes.
And he's like, Paul Newman asks him, why do you talk so much? And he's, and his one reply in the whole scene is, guess I'm just naturally blabby. And it's just the way it's delivered and in the context is so good. And then the other one that comes to mind at the end of the movie, when they're holed up and surrounded by all those soldiers, and right at the beginning of it, Paul Newman says, I think there's just one. There's got to be just one. And Redford kind of holds his hat out around the corner, and it gets shot by seven or eight people.
Yeah,
and
just he just Swiss looks at cheese. Him straight
face, and he's like, do you ever get tired of being right? It's just the way he delivered his lines, man.
Yeah, and I'll go next to juxtapose that, because those are a couple examples of the many great comedic lines in this. But one of my favorite scenes, my favorite bits of dialogue in this movie, it was they're sleeping, and it's when I can't think of her name now. Edda, is that her name?
Yes.
Edda basically tells Robert Redford's character, Sundance Kid, that she's going to head home, meaning America. And despite I'll just kind of run through the scene, and then I'll go through my reading on it and why I loved it. She says she's leaving for home, meaning America. And he says, well, do whatever you want to do, you know? And then he says to Paul Newman's character, Butch Cassidy, says, do you hear that? Edda's going to be going home, thinks she's going home. And he says the same thing. Well, do whatever you want to do, I guess. And it's such simple dialogue, but the meaning behind it, because they both absolutely don't want her to go. They're both devastated by that news. They both kind of realize that that moment essentially symbolizes the end of their run, at least as this group that they are. And it's so devastating, but it's so simple the way it's portrayed, and it's displayed in this kind of lighthearted manner, but you can tell that they both just absolutely hate it. I loved everything about that scene.
And it's the context is perfect, the writing, because previously in the movie, when they say they're going to Bolivia, she tells Sundance, she's like, I'll go with you, I'll do this, I'll do that, I'll patch
it. Yes.
She just says, I won't watch you die. I'm not going to stick around for that scene. And then when we know that scene's coming up, she leaves.
Yeah. And we know, and by their reactions to her saying that, they know. And it just is so simple, yet so just heartbreaking. And it just, it's almost depressing, because we've got this lighthearted, jovial, fun, adventurous atmosphere. And then there's that scene, which basically tells us, and they know, that all of that, it's done now. And it's kind of sad, because it's like, man, all right, the fun is over, I guess. So, but I loved that scene. But Steve, what about you? Did you have anything any line that you particularly enjoyed?
I don't know if it was necessarily a line, but there's a scene, the couple scenes where they're robbing the train, and they're talking to I believe it's Woodcock.
To Woodcock,
yes.
And they come the first time, and they blow it up. And then the second time he comes back, and he's like, Woodcock, is that you?
The way Newman's face lights up, he's like, Woodcock, like he's an old friend.
Oh, but
he's robbing the same train, guarding the train that he's robbing for a second time. Such a good interaction.
Yeah, I mean, we could go on and on with the fantastic scenes of fantastic comedies. I mean, when they're trying to have when there's like a standoff with the Mexicans, and the Mexicans don't speak English, they speak poor Spanish, so they're trying to figure out what's going on. Just an absolute brilliant scene, brilliant setup. And
you want to talk about another serious moment.
Yes, that's what I mean. A perfect example of this writer's ability, where it's funny and it's funny and it's funny, and then it's like, oh man, this got real. Like, because his line
and the way they used Robert Redford's face and his silence to change the mood is, you know, because it's this funny interaction. They don't speak Spanish. They're trying to get this money. And then they know there's going to be some sort of standoff. And then Newman's character, Butch Cassidy, tells him he's never killed somebody before. And then it's like, you know, it's about to happen. And it's the way it's shown. I mean, good all around. So good.
Yeah. Very, very, very good. But let's move on to another aspect. We talked about Conrad Hall and how he's, you know, top tier all timer of cinematography. What did you think about the look of this movie? What if any specific shots stood out to you? What did you enjoy or not enjoy, if you had any qualms with it, about this movie?
Yeah, I'll let you go first, Steve. This first time seeing it, yeah, it may be fresh eyes. What'd you notice?
I think I said it earlier, for a movie that's made in 1969, it looks very good for being, what, 50, 54 years old, whatever.
Yeah,
I can't really pick one scene out that's really fantastic. Just like visually, over the course of the movie, it's very well made.
Yeah, definitely. I enjoyed the beginning. The
opening shot. Yeah.
Went from you know, like the old timey silent movie reel into the actual movie. The montages that just kind of felt like a musical, with, you know, the singing in the rain, which was it's a silly moment in the movie, but somehow fits and works. Loved that. I particularly loved the camera work when they were being chased by the Pinkertons. Because it's this like half hour long, almost unending chasing where they just cannot lose these people on their tail, and the way that they just always seem to be in the distance in the frame, to where they're just present at all times, or Robert Redford or Newman will be taking up, it'll be a close-up shot of them taking up the entire screen, and they'll have a conversation about how the hell they get away, and then they'll exit off screen left or right, and there in the distance is the Pinkertons, uh-huh, still, yep, there on their tails. I loved that.
The decision that you never hear a word. They're never the focus. These people chasing them, anyways. Never the
you
focus.
Never see them, you ever. Never see, I mean, other than face, a silhouette in the distance. They're, uh-huh, just, it's like the old days when zombies, the terrifying part of zombies are just that they're never ending and they're always there. That was those people. They're just there. And the way they just always had them off, and, you know, either if they were off in the distance to the top right as they were riding, or like I said, they just, you know, Newman moves and there they are in the distance again. It just really, really brilliant.
There's one scene, it's not necessarily cinematography, but I want to bring it up. When they're blowing up that train, and it's just Butch and Sundance standing in front of it, and they just load it up with dynamite. I don't know how they pulled off that practical explosion without somebody dying, because they are just destroyed by shrapnel. And I know it's just body doubles or stuntmen, whatever you want to call them, but
yeah, gosh, I can tell you how. I mean, I can guess how. They didn't. I promise you, stuntmen got hurt. that's how they did it. They just were like, hey, who wants to get paid money to get blown up?
Yeah, there's wood falling everywhere in that scene,
man.
It's ridiculous.
Don't you miss that about movies though, when explosions, like, for real, like, you could almost feel them coming off the screen? Well,
and I was
crap.
Thinking that same thing about using practical explosions and squibs and whatever you want to, and even the scenes you're talking about, to have in camera and frame it the way you want it. I mean, the coordination of,
right,
because nowadays it would be just some sort of, you know, LED backlit thing, you know, just, they're not actually there, those people in the fight. I mean, in this, you're shooting there, like, you're there, and you have to get it perfect. It's just incredible that, I mean, because it's 1969, the technology, they're shooting on film. They're not doing anything with digital enhancements or CGI. It's just, yeah, and I think that's part of the charm of it.
We mentioned all these cinematography and the shots, and we haven't even mentioned, I mean, it's a Western, the scenery, the settings, the mountains, all beautiful. Bolivia, from Wyoming, I think, is where it starts, if I'm not mistaken, to Bolivia, to, just gorgeous, just absolutely beautiful.
Yeah, there's not a whole lot. I mean, I know it's not a perfect movie. There's a few things. We said it didn't feel dated. There are a few things that did feel.
So let's get into that then. we've kind of been having a love fest, and rightfully so. I mean, great movie. But what negatives, if any, did you notice, or what bugged you about it? What could they have done differently?
Some things that I notice every time I've seen this, and I've seen it a lot, is there are scenes that were obviously shot with no dialogue, and they do that. They record the dialogue and then they put it over the top. But there are some scenes where it's like these guys are obviously not talking to each other, and they decided to record additional dialogue to throw in there that didn't quite work. There's a scene where after they jump off the cliff into this rushing whitewater rapid,
that one bugged me.
They're having this jokey banter as they're obviously not talking.
They're underwater half the time and talking. Yeah, that one bugged me. I noticed that too, and mostly it didn't bug me except for that one really irked me.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess, and I'm trying to think of anything visually that... I don't think it's anything visually. I think it's just more of the technical aspects of the sound design, or the adding the dialogue in places that it obviously wasn't there or planned to be there. They just added it. I can't think of anything else, but it mostly just that.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Steve,
the gunfighting at some points was a little, I don't know. It doesn't seem silly,
dated,
but there are some times where they get shot and throw themselves to the ground.
Absolutely. Or whatever. The old Western dated kind of, you know, stereotypical, like, oh, they clutch their chest and fling themselves back type of deal. But
one guy at the end literally sets his gun down gently to die over on the other side of a wall.
But still, I mean, these dudes are still, that's still stuntmen just falling off buildings. I still dug it. Yes.
No, the final shootout, it was fantastic.
Does that dated, yes,
it is kind of dated,
but it gives it that kind of Western charm, because you don't see that anywhere else other than Westerns. The whole clutch their chest and spin and fall, I loved that. I personally loved it. Yes, it does date it, but Steve, any other negatives you notice or want to talk about
on top of that? No, I can't really add to that.
All right, I guess we mentioned go ahead.
What do you guys think of how the movie ended?
Like specifically, because or the scene?
Specifically the very end,
the freeze frame?
The freeze frame when they run out the building. I mean, because
I loved it.
I thought it was perfect.
Okay.
We all know what was going to happen. We didn't need to see
that's
it.
My point. Yeah, do we need to see
we
it?
We ended it still on a fun note, if that makes any sense, because they're still bantering, they're still going back and forth while they're shot, and then they run out of the building, and it almost is like that. First of all, I think the reason they did that is because there's, I don't know whether you want to call them conspiracy theories or whatever, that they somehow made it out that the bodies that were found were not them, and that they are alive. So I'm sure that's why they did it.
Yep, to show that they died is final.
95% convinced they died, but it's that glimmer of hope. Like, these guys are, you know, like, they're going out like so confident, and just like, it's another, we've been here before. Let's do this. And they go out the door shooting, and then it freeze frames. We end on a high note. We end, we're still happy. We to see these two characters get mowed down, we don't need that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So I thought it was a great decision.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was another one of those moments, and because of the way they did it, it was one of those moments where, you know, they have their banter, they go and you're having fun, and you're thinking like, these guys aren't, like, they're not scared, they're still having this witty banter, they're having a good time, and then it ends, and then you hear just hundreds of shots, it just kind of hits you, where it's like, shit. So it's one of those again, those perfect combinations of, this is fun, but there's real life consequences to what's going on though.
Yeah, and that was throughout. The one, I think he was a sheriff, that was just telling them they're just nothing but two-bit outlaws. Yes, they're famous, yes, they're great at what they do, but all they are is outlaw. I mean, there are some serious notes in there. The one scene, I don't know if you guys, to me, it's a standout scene when, right as the shootout's starting, and they have to go get more ammo from the mule that's in the middle of this open area, and they're trying to decide who has to run out there. Another perfect scene of using Redford's silence and acting subtleties, with Paul Newman's banter when he's, you know, he tells him that Sundance can go, he's faster, but then Butch Cassidy realizes he has to go, so Sundance can cover him, and it's just the way they use silence from Redford's character, and all it is a look to affirm or and get, it is, he gives kind of that Bruce Willis smirk.
Yeah,
at that point, definitely. I mean, yeah, so good.
And how great was it? How great was it that this whole movie they've built up Sundance, Redford's character, as this just absolute crack shot, you know, crazy good with the gun, and Newman's not so much. He's the idea guy, and then in the big shootout, Newman barely fires a shot. He's the one that goes to get the ammo. He's the one that's, you know, running from cover to cover while Redford's providing cover and living up to the hype that has been thrown on his character, mm-hmm. you know, that legend building that's been done throughout the movie. I loved it. I mean, it sucks because, you know, they're outnumbered, they're outgunned, you know, they're going to die. But to finally get to see Redford, like, oh, dude, dang, this dude can shoot. I loved it. I dug every bit of it.
I wanted to add is one of the very first scenes you meet Sundance is when he's playing poker or whatever.
Yeah,
like just how big his character is to the other characters.
Yeah,
like he doesn't know who it is, but then when he finds out, he's like, "Holy cow!"
It's the John Wick thing all over. Yeah, I guess that's way before the legend John Wick, obviously.
But that's an action movie staple.
Yep.
I loved that. And another a brilliant example of the good writing. It's a comedic moment, but because of Redford's absolute just intensity, the fire that he has, there's that tension, like, oh, like is it about to go down right now? But yeah,
another instance of his just dry, fantastic humor when he accuses him of cheating and asks him how he's won every single hand. And he just glares at him and says, "Prayer." It's like, you know, his version of dry humor, but it makes the situation so tense.
Yeah, and it's funny, also incredibly tense. Yeah, yep. Definitely. Little moments like that. Redford was so good. Man, I loved him in this. Any last minute, any things that you want to bring up that we didn't mention that you think should be mentioned before we get into grading?
I don't have anything.
Okay. Nope, let's do it.
Yeah, let's hop into it. Steve, it was your choice. You get to choose first or last. Which one do you want to go?
I will go first on this one.
All right. So 12, 13, 14.
So this is one I've had on my list to watch for a while, and I was searching through movies of what we haven't done, and this came up, and I was like, well, it's Paul Newman and Robert Redford. It did not disappoint at all. This is a fantastic movie. The acting across the board is good, whether it's Redford or Newman, and even some of the smaller characters are fantastic. Yeah. And like you said, this is of who's of Hollywood, composer, cinematographer, writer, director. I'm going to give this a 9.
Yeah, I don't hate that. Don't hate that at all. Aaron, what do you got?
I guess I'm not. I'm right around there. I was debating between 8.5 and 8.75. It's not even my favorite Paul. Not to take away from it, it's not my favorite Paul Newman performance. It's not my favorite Paul Newman movie. Neither is it my favorite Redford performance or movie.
But is it where does it rank in your Westerns? Because you have to grade a movie based on what it's trying to be in the genre that it fits in.
Sure. I mean, it's an obvious top three of all time.
That's what I'm saying.
But yeah, I mean, 8.75, I'll stick with. I mean, there's not a whole lot to not like, but there are a few to me. I mean, we said that the singing in the rain part fit, but to me, it is a little jarring and doesn't quite fit perfectly. Some of, like I said, where they record,
it's almost
the
like
dialogue.
Charlie Chaplin level comedy at that point.
Where
the music playing and you know, the almost physical comedy at that
and
point.
It just feels a little off from the rest of it. So, that's, I mean, fair. It's not a perfect movie, but 8.75. I will continue to revisit this movie because of who's in it and because of the quality of the movie.
Yeah. So first of all, I'm glad Steve picked this. I always love when somebody picks a movie that I want to, and it's like a free pick for me, because I absolutely love Westerns. This is, just off the top of my head, without digging deep, I'd probably put this in my top five of Westerns of all time. I love every bit of it. I love how it's just so unique to the Western genre. I love the performances. As we've said multiple times, this is just an awards filled cast and crew, and it shows in the result. I'm going to make our final score even, make it easy. I'm giving it a 9.25, bringing us to an even nine as what Mike always call it. I forget what he call it. The final accumulative, whatever.
Yeah, but, final total accumulative.
Yeah. So, but our average score is a 9, giving it an A, a 9 out of 10, which is an A, which I'm.
Which it definitely
such
is
such a good movie.
Yeah. So now, are you ready for a this or that at a 9?
No, because this is gonna be rough, man. It's always a lot easier when it's dumpy movies.
These first two, this is gonna be fun because these are basically, what do they call them now? Neo Westerns, where they're not real Westerns, but they're basically, so this or Hell or High Water.
Hell or High Water. That's more my speed. I'm more into like the serious action thrills than. Yeah, lightheartedness. So just because of that, I'll take that.
I'm gonna say Hell or High Water.
You know, I might lean that too, but it might be a flip of a coin. Another one, Wind River, neo western.
I am so high on that movie. Yes. It's not even funny. Like I can overlook a lot of its flaws because of how much I love its strengths. I'm picking that. No,
you can
like,
that's not even difficult. Johnny love Bean. It.
Even well, I mean, here's yeah. All right, this or that, Johnny Beans or Paul Newman. I mean, come on,
right? Yeah, exactly.
I'll say Wind River.
Yeah, I might.
You know what, though, that Bernthal scene, that was rough. I forgot.
It
I
is forget very that
when I think of Wind River. So I'm gonna take this.
Yeah, this god, this or the Green Mile.
This shorter, quicker, this faster paced.
Exactly. The Green Mile tears me up. And that's
it's devastating. It's absolutely devastating. Plus, that's the thing, is like you at least end this movie feeling happy. That one is like, all right, there's my heart on the floor.
All right. This or Die Hard.
Die Hard, no doubt.
I might go this.
Absolutely no doubt, Die Hard. Like not
all right. We'll end it with a Western to Western comparison, right around the same score. This or Unforgiven.
Unforgiven. That probably is my number
top
one
Western of all time.
Yeah, and Clint Eastwood is my favorite Western star. It's my favorite Clint Eastwood performance. I mean, it's that one. As much as I love this, Unforgiven, I don't even think about it.
Yeah.
Which is funny because we just got done saying how good this movie is.
I mean, but when we reviewed Unforgiven,
I think we picked it once.
Yeah, I mean, that's what happens when you're comparing nines.
Yeah, we're talking about top 20 of all time that we've ever reviewed.
Yeah.
So, I mean, of course, we're going to have
Unforgiven is so good, though.
Yeah, so good. You know, I still might. I don't know. That's another coin toss one for me. But, yeah.
Man, you want to talk. I mean, Clint Eastwood and Morgan Freeman. Holy cow. And Gene Hackman. Oh, my God.
See, and that's why I might lean Hell or Butch Cassidy, because I thought Hackman was a little hamming it up.
Yeah, but that was his character too. He was telling his own story.
Whatever. Anyways, all right. So that's that. 9 is the final. That puts us at a tie for 19th place of all of the movies we've reviewed. So top 20.
Yeah, like I said, if anybody listening has not seen this, do yourself a favor. I mean, even if you don't like Westerns, like we mentioned, this doesn't feel like your typical Western. So if you're thinking, man, I just don't like Westerns, still give it a shot. I think Paul Newman and Redford, the duo, their banter, the writing, watch this movie, dig into who made it, who's behind the camera in front of it. Check out, you're not going to go wrong with anybody involved in this entire
movie. And if you saw a TikTok and think that Paul Newman is best known for Cars,
right,
go watch this movie.
Then you nailed it. You don't have to do your homework. You already know. Yeah, that's rough. Yeah, Mike, we need to make Mike watch this. We need to make Mike watch a lot of things. Anywho, I think I have the next pick coming up.
Yep. You do.
I'm torn. I don't know. I'm we've been doing a lot of like weird out there movies. So I think I'm going to bring us down to earth with just kind of a straightforward kind of movie, but I don't know what that is yet. So I'll let you guys know, but I am excited for that. And don't forget, you can find this on all social media, on Instagram, at the Movie Review Crew with an underscore in between each word, Twitter at the Movie Review Crew, Facebook, the Movie Review Crew. We're on Letterboxd. If you have a movie you'd like to have us discuss, or if you want to share your thoughts on a movie that we have reviewed, or something that you've just seen, you go right there on our homepage on the website. You can submit a request, submit your thoughts, and we'll discuss it on there. If nobody else here has anything to add, I guess somebody just end the show.
Tell your friends.
All right. See you later.
Let's go. But inconspicuously. Through the window.
Lady, I'm afraid I'm going to have to ask you to leave the store.
Okay, that's it. Screw you guys. I'm going home.
Game over, man. Game over. What are we going to do now? What are we going to do?
Good night. And good luck.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Movie Review Crew. Remember to like us and find us on any of your favorite social media platforms, as well as go to our website, moviereviewcrew.com.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.